The Fixed Income Team Talk by Aberdeen.
Welcome to the Aberdeen Fixed Income Team Talk. My name is Peter Marsland. I'm an investment specialist at Aberdeen. And today I'm joined by Adam Skerry, who's the head of inflation within our rates team. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
And joining us is also Sri Kochu Govardhan, the senior economist within our research institute. Morning, Sri.
Hi, Peter.
Today, the topic is inflation. But before we dive into that, regular listeners to the podcast will know that we like to start the team talk with a bit of more of an offbeat question. So today's question is, what past music or sporting event do you wish you had attended? And I'll open that up to Sri.
Well, that's a very good question. I think it will probably be a concert from a few decades ago, someone like Ella Fitzgerald. I think that would have been amazing to watch her perform live.
Great live performer. And same question for you, Adam.
Well, I suppose we'll have to go back to the 70s. If we're going to be talking about inflation, I suppose going back then is the sort of most relevant decade. So, you know, seeing Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd on the sort of concert front. Sporting-wise, probably, you know, 1970s, going back to the derby, Nijinsky winning in 70. Particularly if I could take the list of winners with me, that'd be quite handy as well.
Very good. And for myself, I think I'd have to go for a musical event. I'd have to go back to 1985. I just left school, just started going to concerts, and would have loved to have gone to Live Aid at Wembley. I think that would have been a fantastic event just for the sort of iconic spectacle that it was. But some of the great performances of that day would have been fantastic to see firsthand. Okay, let's move back into modern day then, and to the main topic that we're going to discuss today. And it's obvious that, you know, the elevated levels of inflation that we're seeing at the moment continue to be, you know, the dominant story and economic theme across the globe for governments, central banks, and also for the general population. And the notion of this transitory phenomenon for inflation has been replaced by a realization that it has become more persistent and far-reaching than previously thought. Now, this has resulted in, you know, many central banks increasing base rates sharply in an attempt to tame the pressure upon prices. And market expectations are that they will be broadly successful in achieving this objective, you know, particularly as some of the pandemic-related issues begin to ease. However, looking further forward, there are a variety of longer-term structural issues at play that can't be completely overlooked when we consider the outlook for future inflation. So is it also possible that these headwinds could result in a more persistent higher inflation environment than we're used to today? So to cover these and to tackle some of those points, I'm now going to pose a few questions to Adam and Sri to get their views. So let's kick off with, we had a big news yesterday with the US inflation print. So what are the main drivers at the moment to the higher inflation environment that we're experiencing? What are the main drivers? Is it mainly due to higher energy prices? And I'll get you to kick that off, Adam.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Pete. In short, I mean, yes, the commodity story is still there. And it's still, I think, the thing to kind of highlight is that it's still extremely volatile. So in terms of the changes that we're seeing in energy prices, you know, whether that be oil, whether that be in gas, it depends, you know, sort of region to region, country by country, but it is still a driver and is likely to remain, as I say, a sort of volatile component of the overall inflation picture. But I think what's more troubling or has got the attention of the central banks more is that the core inflation components have been particularly strong. And they're the elements that can be more sticky, more persistent, the ones that, you know, weren't transitory when, you know, we heard Jerome Powell over the last, you know, couple of years ago sort of saying, you know, it should blow over. The way that this has kind of evolved has meant that core inflation has been much more persistent. And so, as you say, even in the last few prints, we've seen that there's even been a divergence within that core component. So you've got core goods prices, which are actually leveling off, and in the October print, so the most recent one we had yesterday, it actually went into negative territory. So core goods prices have kind of come off relatively, you know, kind of sharply. And that's really just a reversal of the kind of COVID surge that we saw. So when we all went into lockdown, we all went out and bought new laptops and we all went out and bought, you know, new desks and whatnot. So that has actually reversed. So the demand side there on the good side has kind of been mitigated. Sri can probably talk more about the sort of supply side easing there. So there has been a kind of easing of the supply bottlenecks that were kind of endemic within the pandemic. But on the services side, again, which has kind of caught the attention of the central banks, there's still persistence there. So, and that is something that generally does last a little bit longer. And it's much more closely tied historically to what the labour market looks like. So because a big part of the services cost base is down to that labour input cost, if we do think that the labour market can remain tight, then you can see even more persistence within that service sector. So it's those kind of issues that the central banks are really trying to grapple with and that make us think that we've probably seen the peak in kind of headline inflation, particularly in the US, which was in June this year, so June 22. The peak in European and UK inflation is likely to be the kind of October, November prints that we see in the next month or two. And then there'll be a trajectory downwards. But it's where the big question for us is really where that plateaus. So, you know, where does that actually level out? But they're the key drivers at the moment.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with all of that, Adam. I think I'd just add in terms of, you're right, it has peaked in the US. Definitely yesterday's inflation print was quite encouraging. But I think we need to be a bit careful about reading too much into the one print. And what I would highlight is just picking out on one of the points that you made. Oil price, obviously, you know, is going to stay quite high and elevated, and food price spikes potentially in the next few months. As we go through the winter months, there could be some more volatility there. But again, as you mentioned, that has peaked, and we're likely to see quite a sharp disinflationary drag from that over the next few months going into next year. But again, as you say, it's headline. And what the central bankers are more interested in is what's happening to the core and the underlying inflation pressures. And there, if we look at the supply chain bottlenecks, there's definitely easing some of those pandemic distortions. They have improved quite markedly, but there's still, you know, this is a slow recovery and there's still some distortions there. And you can start by looking just geographically. China's zero COVID strategy is still in place. So we're not seeing the perfect storm of disruptions that we had experienced, say, in 2021, where we had the Delta wave going across Asia. And that was really hitting that global value, global production hub, in a sense. That was really causing a lot of distortions and pushing up core goods prices as a result. So we've gone through the peak there, but there's still some distortions there. As I say, China zero COVID strategy looks like it's going to stay in place for a meaningful period of time. And what we're seeing is some pockets of supply disruptions and pockets of excess supply, actually. So that's going to be quite interesting to see how it's impacting different sectors. But also we're going through a period where, you know, yesterday's US CPI was quite interesting, how used car prices came down quite sharply. So again, we are seeing an improvement there, but that's going to be a slow process in terms of core goods prices improving. But as Adam has already highlighted, it's core services that's really quite worrying. It's the wage pressures that continue to stay quite elevated and quite strong in the US. And that's going to be the one to watch there. And the reason that's so important is because inflation expectations depend on that. The longer we stay in this period of high inflation, people are going to start pricing that in. And we'll see that in the way firms set mobile phone tariffs, for example. That's one example we look at. They don't just look at their input costs. They add on a little bit extra to take into account that tariff needs to account for inflation going forward. So we'll see. It's important to watch these sort of micro level movements as well going forward. So I think yesterday's data was encouraging, but just to look out for, you know, future trends, and really it's expectations that's going to be quite important going forward.
Yeah, I think that sort of underlines the sort of complex nature of the factors that are driving inflation, whether it's core, non-core, whether it's energy prices, etc. So I think it's quite a complex picture. And with some of those sort of on the way up and some of those are sort of on the way down, it's interesting to see how the market is pricing where inflation will be in a sort of, you know, in the mean sort of medium term over the next couple of years. So how likely is it that inflation actually does return to the levels that are being predicted by the markets? Because they're almost forecasting that they'll get back to where central bank targets are. And I think that's going to be quite an interesting dynamic to see play out. So how likely is that, Adam, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, if our starting point is what's currently priced into the front end of these inflation curves, if we look at the kind of, particularly the US sort of fixings market, so what it's saying is that, you know, yesterday's print was kind of, you know, in the high sevens. That's going to come down in CPI terms to around about 5% in March next year. And then that's going to come down to around 3% in June, and then really just level out around there. So going into kind of 2024, CPI is seen as being kind of in the sort of 2.8 to 3.2% range. So that is still above the Fed's 2% target, albeit a sort of flexible average inflation target. So, you know, the market is saying, yes, the Fed are going to be successful. They're going to be able to pull down headline CPI, but it's still going to be slightly above where we've seen it historically kind of sit, and slightly above where the Fed are kind of targeting. I think for us, it's where that plateau actually happens. So yes, you know, as Sri's just pointed out, you know, we've seen the peak, it's coming down, but the kind of the bigger question for us and for the markets really is, where does that actually sit? Where does it actually level out? And we say, okay, this is a level of inflation that we're happy to kind of sit with. And I think a lot of that is going to be determined by what the economic backdrop is when we go into that kind of environment. So if we think that, as is kind of priced at the moment, that we're going to be going into recession in the US, then, you know, the Fed are going to have to sort of shift more away from just purely looking at the inflation side of their mandate towards the unemployment side of things, to actually consider the impacts that tighter financial conditions are going to have on growth. So, you know, on top of that, you've got the sort of fiscal question as well, as whether there is going to be any fiscal intervention. The US political dynamic is still a little bit up in the air because we haven't got the full results yet from the midterms. But, you know, if the assumption is that there's not going to be an awful lot of fiscal stimulus coming, or a lot of fiscal policy kind of implemented, then the emphasis again kind of falls on the Fed to kind of be the release valve in terms of if there is needed to be looser conditions, tighter conditions, whatever kind of is needed at that given time. So, you know, I think there's still, you know, an awful lot of uncertainty around it. But to our mind, the sort of the structural drivers that we look at, so when we look beyond the next kind of 12 months and say, okay, how persistent can this inflation dynamic be? There's more upside risk than downside. So, you know, we do think that there is a chance that inflation can be stickier for longer, but not at such a level that is a problem for the Fed. Because when they've got that flexible average inflation target, they don't have to hit 2% month on month, quarter by quarter, precisely. They can afford to have a little bit more kind of wiggle room, which to our mind means that, you know, inflation can sit at a level above that for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, I think it's a really challenging backdrop for central bankers right now. And I think the way policy is set at the moment is going to be quite critical for the path of inflation going forward. We've been talking in previous research reports about the trade-off or the sacrifice, how much activity is going to be sacrificed in order to tame inflation, and that there is that trade-off, unfortunately. So at the moment, what we're seeing is household incomes being eroded by higher energy prices, utility costs, food prices, but also mortgage rates, borrowing costs. You know, as the Fed, as central bankers everywhere are hiking rates, this is really eating into household incomes, corporate incomes. And we are of the view that there's going to be a recession as a result of this. But we're also of the view that that's actually necessary in order to tame inflation now. It's better to be aggressive now in order to prevent a 1970s style escalation in prices and allowing inflation to sort of escape in the way that it did back then. And that was actually a policy error. So I think one thing to really investors should be focusing on over the course of next year is this idea of the pivot. There is a lot being made of, you know, the fact that yesterday's print was so much better, that the Fed can take the foot off the pedal. But would that really be so wise just yet? In a way, you need to take some of that excess demand out of the system, and that might take a recession, a short one, hopefully. But unfortunately, that's necessary in order to tame inflation. It would be better to do that rather than have a much deeper, protracted recession and further hikes. If they were to pause or ease too early, that would be a mistake potentially. So that's something just to be aware of going forward.
Yeah, there certainly seems to be a bit of a dilemma that central banks are facing at the moment between the whole taming inflation or choking off economic growth altogether dilemma. So well, definitely one to watch. And I think with, you know, what we've seen with the Fed in the last few years, where they moved to that flexible average inflation targeting, and the ECB have even softened their language around exactly what they mean by an inflation target. Do we think that the central banks will persist with a specific inflation target going forward? If inflation stays stubbornly high, will they tend to be tempted to move the goalposts, or are they wedded to this sort of 2% inflation target going forwards, do we think?
Yeah, I think the immediate heat has come off the central banks to some extent. So in the UK, you know, we had Liz Truss, who was sort of quite adamant that she wanted to bring into to question the independence of the Bank of England. I think that's kind of calmed down somewhat. And it seems that generally there is an acceptance that the central bank targeting of their current inflation levels, i.e. 2% across most of the developed markets, is a sensible one, and is not kind of to the detriment too much to the rest of the economy. Now, that's quite easy to say when you've got unemployment down at kind of historic lows, you've got growth that is still kind of holding in relatively well, albeit slowing. It perhaps comes into question more when you've got lower nominal GDP growth, you've got unemployment that's picking up, you've got higher funding costs for business, and you're starting to see, you know, kind of fractures appear in, you know, the balance sheets of both corporates and households, as that cost of living and the, you know, the financing costs are increased. But I don't think there's any kind of immediate pressure on the central banks to really shift away from that 2% target. The other question is given the size of the debt piles that are out there, both in terms of sovereign debt, corporate debt, household debts, is a little bit of inflation necessarily that bad a thing? Will governments and central banks actually go, well, in terms of eroding some of that enormous debt pile that we've got, having inflation running at a kind of 2 to 3% kind of level, is that necessarily such a bad thing? Yes, that is slightly above their kind of mandated targets, but it's, you know, for the greater good, perhaps that's not such a bad thing. But yeah, I it's all kind of, it's a huge debate, and it's one that's kind of centered again around the sort of blurred lines now between central banks and fiscal authorities. So when you've got governments kind of trying to implement policy on one side, you've got central banks potentially sort of pushing against that. So, you know, you've got kind of fiscal expansion by governments, but you've also got central banks trying to sort of push against that, where that kind of line actually becomes blurred. So, you know, for example, in the UK, there's been an awful lot of chat recently, and even today, about the kind of level of mortgage lending, the availability of mortgage debt. So if the Bank of England are targeting inflation and they're just going to be fairly kind of myopic about that and just keep targeting it and hiking rates to get that inflation level down, does that absolutely kill the housing market? And on top of the cost of living crisis we've already got, will it take the fiscal authorities, so, you know, government, to step in and say, actually, we're going to put targeted kind of policy in place that means that people aren't going to be, you know, kind of kicked out of their homes. We're not going to foreclose on these mortgages. So again, that probably has to come from the government legislation side in conjunction with something that the Bank of England can do, whether that be sort of forbearance on mortgages, or whether it's sort of legislation around banks being able to offer mortgage holidays, that kind of thing. I think there's going to be a lot of flexibility and a lot of discussion between, as I say, the central banks and the governments, which is a big open-ended question. But for the near term, I think everyone realizes that getting inflation down from these historically very, very high levels should be the priority. Whether that actually ends up getting inflation back to 2%, or whether it's something slightly above or slightly below, is yet to be seen. But I don't think there's any imminent change to the mandates of the major central banks at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. I think the example of the UK is perfect, really. We saw how credibility is so important. Central bank credibility has been a big role over the last 20 years or so in bringing inflation to stable and low levels. So any threat to that, we could see there was an instant reaction, really, market discipline. That, because at the start of the pandemic, there were a lot of questions about, you know, inflation being used to erode away debt, and how easy can that be for governments to do over time? Well, we've seen that there was a very quick response from the markets in order to, you know, and we've seen the changes, political changes since then. And if anything, now there is, as Adam's saying, targeted support through this winter, so we can think about the energy price support. But the overwhelming sort of focus is on how to move forward with some fiscal discipline. So we're talking tax hikes now, which is a complete reversal of where we were just a few weeks ago. So again, I'd agree with Adam. I don't see any meaningful change there in terms of central bank mandates. I think they're quite safe in their independence for now.
Okay, so no change to come, we think, in that regard. But looking further ahead at some of the sort of longer term impacts or trends that could influence inflation and the way inflation develops, what are we seeing there that could sort of maybe cause us to think there's more of a sort of headwind to longer term inflation than the sort of tailwind we've enjoyed over the last 30 years? And with an economist hat on, Sri, maybe you could kick this one off.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've had some really important structural drivers over the last 20 years or so that have been helping to bring inflation lower over time. So the first part would be the demographic trends. You know, we had globalization, technological progress, and these are all quite interconnected in a way. So globalization actually has an impact in terms of having a global workforce and being able to relocate so that you can take advantage, the comparative advantage of a different country, whether that's cheap labor or cheap production costs and so on. So really taking advantage of the skills and the workforce there. So when you think about demographics, you need to think of it within that global context as well. But obviously there's been a lot of debate now about what happens going forward. Are these drivers becoming much more inflationary? And what I would say first of all is that these structural drivers, they either act as a tailwind or a headwind to inflation. Okay, so they're not the main driver. The main driver, I'd say, is still central bank policy. For us to move from one inflation regime to another, whether it's meaningfully higher or meaningfully lower, it really depends on central bank policy, the policy mix, and that's primarily monetary, and also the inflation expectations. That's what leads us into a much more different inflation regime. And that's what we saw in the 70s. So I would say that that's more important than these other drivers. These other drivers are slow moving, but they are still important in that they will provide a sort of a tailwind or headwind, as I said earlier. So I'd say that globalization's obviously been a big point of debate. We've had the pandemic and we've seen, you know, this focus on goods security. Healthcare goods, tech, semiconductors have been so disruptive. The fact that the semiconductor supply chain is so fragmented and crosses multiple borders multiple times. So that's been, that's really brought everything to light. Just didn't realize before how integrated the supply chain had been. So that has been a focus, and we've seen different legislation and focused at semiconductors or some moves towards reshoring, which is a bit different to what we saw before in terms of the trade wars that we had before. So these are slow moving processes. But what I would say is globalization isn't just about trade. So if you look at trade, then yes, that's been a slowing trend. But technology is also very important. The diffusion of tech and knowledge, that's all part of the story as well. And that you can't move away from. So I would be a bit careful about saying, well, globalization is going to into reverse. I think that's going to be very difficult to disentangle the intricate supply chains that have been put in place over the course of 20 years. That's going to be very difficult. But there will be some reshoring, and we're seeing that, and a slower pace of trade. But does that necessarily mean more jobs at home? Not necessarily, because there is this tech evolution as well. So a lot of these processes will be automated to an extent. So I think it's quite important to keep an eye on both of those trends together, the trade and the tech trends as well. And obviously there is a lot of focus on demographics and the fact that many developed market economies are going through an aging process. So that will reduce the workforce to an extent. And that's something that I've been looking at, you know, looking at the structural drivers together, demographics, trade and tech. And I have to say, in my analysis, demographics is very slow moving and is probably the least important from an inflationary perspective. Yes, it's true that there'll be drivers of certain prices for certain goods. I mean, healthcare is going to be a big story for the next 10, 15 years. And so certain sectors will be impacted more. But I would say trade and technology need to be investigated and watched very carefully. But as I said before, it's the policy mix that's really going to be the big driver of any future trends and whether or not we shift from one inflation paradigm to another. And that example of the 1970s, I think, is quite important, where we saw that shift in that relationship between the level of inflation and the level of unemployment, to keep it quite simple. That relationship shifted in a very detrimental way. And again, it's policy that's the main trigger there.
Thank you, Sri. Anything to add to that, Adam, briefly?
Yeah, just in brief, and just bringing it back to what markets have got currently priced. I mean, if you think inflation is going to be persistent or is going to be slightly more sticky for the reasons that Sri's pointed out in the longer term, then you look at where the break evens are currently. I mean, in the US, 10-year breaks are around 2.4%, Europe 2.3%. So that is saying, you know, it's almost Goldilocks that we're coming straight back down to, you know, inflation targets. It's all going to be a kind of, you know, storm in a teacup. And over the long term, then inflation is going to be absolutely, you know, nothing really to worry about. So if you are sort of more slightly concerned about those longer term drivers that you think inflation could be stickier for longer, then, you know, break evens at those kind of levels, to me, still look relatively attractive. You know, there's not, you're not paying a huge amount of insurance premium for an upside risk there. And likewise, in terms of real yields, I mean, if we look at the US, real yields now in 10-year are around about 1.5%. So you're getting paid 1.5% over and above whatever inflation prints at, which again looks reasonably attractive if you do think, firstly, there's an inflation risk in the long term. So you're going to get, you know, you're protected against that because your coupon will be, you know, uplifted by that. But also if you think we're in a world where we could be potentially going into a slowdown, recession, you know, things are looking a little bit uncertain for other asset classes, then to be able to lock in a real return of 1.5%, particularly if you think the Fed are, you know, kind of reaching or getting towards the peak in sort of Fed funds rate or base rates, then yeah, still it's on a longer term basis relatively attractive.
No, I think that's very interesting, and it's clear to see that inflation is going to be a key story and an interesting story for the months ahead, and we'll see what transpires. So plenty of food for thought there. So it just leaves me to thank both of our contributors today, to Adam and to Sri. Thank you very much for your contribution. And if this is your first Team Talk podcast, you can find previous episodes on Thinking Aloud on the Aberdeen website. And there you can also subscribe to our fixed income newsletter. So thank you very much for joining this podcast today.
This podcast is provided for general information only and assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets. It is provided for informational purposes only and should not be considered as an offer, investment recommendation, or solicitation to deal in any of the investments or products mentioned herein, and does not constitute investment research. The views in this podcast are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily reflect those of Aberdeen. The companies discussed in this podcast have been selected for illustrative purposes only, or to demonstrate our investment management style and not as an investment recommendation or indication of their future performance. The value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, and investors may get back less than the amount invested. Past performance is not a guide to future returns, return projections, or estimates, and provide no guarantee of future results.